We're holding on page Nun Beis in Shabbos, four lines from the bottom, middle of Os Ayin Ches. We started learning yesterday about the story of Rus. Mashkoch Pratis, actually today's daf for Sfiras HaOmer, so to daf Nun Beis, also talked about the contrast between Rus and Orpah and their respective descendants, where David ended up David defeated Goliath and his men defeated Goliath's brothers. So now we also have over here a little bit about Rus, So we got into it because we were talking about the importance of having Shabbos clothes. And we say that when Naomi told Rus to go down to the granary and meet Boaz, then she tells her to wear her Shabbos clothing. So we started talking about drushes on the psukim over there in the story of Rus. So the pasuk says, "Vayomer Boaz v'goymer l'mi hanara azos." So Boaz asks his foreman, who's supervising the workers, "Whose is this girl? What family does she belong to?" The question is, is it normal for Boaz to be asking about a girl? He's not supposed to be looking at her. So Amar Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Elazar says it's not stam that he was looking at her and he was curious. Dvar chachma raba. He saw that she was acting in a way according to the chachma of Torah. He saw that she was only collecting for leket only when two stalks would fall together, but not if three fell together. Which that's how they have a machlokas b'shamay b'shilul about that in Masech Tepeya. B'shamay holds that you're allowed to take three, but not four. B'shilul holds two, but not three. And the halacha, as usual, is like b'shilul. So he saw that she was following that. Now, Marashah says, so what's the big deal? I mean, shouldn't we assume that the other aniyim were also following the halacha? So Marashah says, Where does Bishamai get the idea that it should be three, that three you're allowed to take, and Bishilul would say two? The reason is Bishamai gets those three on the basis of the pasuk says that you have to leave leket, like ger, like yosim, v'la'amon, for the ger, for the orphan, and for the widow. So therefore, Bishamai says the pasuk is hinting that you need at least one stalk for each, so you need one stalk for each of them. So therefore, now she's all three. She's a ger, and she's an amona, because her husband passed away, and she's poor, so she certainly could. So even Beis Hillel might agree that she has good grounds to take three. Nevertheless, she's only taking two because that is the actual halacha. So therefore, he was very impressed by that. Oitza Bolum on the side brings over here a long explanation. He says, the fact is, you still have to wonder, if Boaz didn't know who she was, and he's asking, Lamia Naira Azois, how does he know that she has all these three things about her, that she's poor, and a giyotis, and an almona, that he should know that, therefore, but she's not taking advantage of that, and she's only taking two. So he gives a long answer, the gist of it. Fine, but the question is how Boaz knows, and why he's asking. So it's a bolum, gives a long explanation, the gist of it being that it's on the side over there. The gist of his explanation is that that Boaz did know who she was, because when she and Naomi came back to town at the end of Perek Aleph of Rus, it says Vatehim Kol Ha'ir, the whole city was in an uproar and they were very surprised to see what happened to Naomi. So he knew who she was. I mean, he's asking Lami Hanayra Azois. He doesn't mean that he doesn't know who she is. She means like who's she associated with? Where did she learn this kind of chachma from? And so therefore, so part of that chachma is, as Marsha explains, that really by rights she would have had the right to take even three stalks at a time, but she knew that the strict halacha is only two, and she wasn't going to take extra advantage. The Braisa, the Gemara continues, "B'masnisa tana." In a Braisa, we learn a different thing that Boaz saw about her that impressed him. Dvar tznius raba. Not just that he saw that she's acting in a way of chochma, but also that he saw that she's acting in a tzniustic way. Oimdus ma'umar. Any stalks that she's collecting that are falling, so any that were forgotten by the harvesters, which is shikha, then ma'umar, she would pick them while she's standing. No voice, but the ones that fell down onto the ground, she wouldn't bend down to pick them up. She wouldn't bend at the waist to pick them up because that would be less sneistic, like her skirt would ride up. Instead, miyushev, she would sit down to take them. So he saw that she's acting in an exceptionally sneistic way.
Have to bring her to Crown Heights.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, the pasuk continues. So Boaz says to her, "You keep on, stay over here and continue collecting leket and shikha in my field. You shouldn't have to go to anybody else's field." And he tells her, "V'choisid bokin imna roisai." And like this, you should stick together with my girls. So the question is, why is he using this expression? Is it usual for Boaz to be sticking together with girls? So now, what kind of a question is that? He says you should stick together with my girls. In other words, you stay together with the other girls, with the other women here in the field. Where do we see that he's trying to make any kind of association between himself and her? So Maharsha says, the thing is, the word sidbokin is a word we sometimes use it in connection with a marital relationship or any kind of relationship between a man and a woman. We find, for example, the dovak v'ishto, that a man cleaves to his wife. We find by Shechem and Dina v'tidbak nafsho, that his soul cleaved to her. So therefore, so if it just meant that he's telling her stick with the girls, and if he's just telling her stay with them rather than being around the boys, then he shouldn't use the expression sidbokin. So therefore, the Gemara is wondering, why is he using dafka that expression? There's a few other explanations as well. One of them is the Rif over here gives the explanation that he means that imna, the Gemara's understanding that imna roisa can mean the same as the other girls. So the same as the other girls stick with me and collect in my field, you do the same. But in that case, why is he expressing himself like that? The girls are not sticking with him in the first place. It's not sniestim. So, there's a few other explanations as well. But anyway, Amar Rav Elazar, what happened was, Kivin de Chaza, once Boaz realized, once he found out the whole backstory of Rus, and you have the part over there when she's on the road with Nami, and Nami keeps on trying to dissuade her from becoming a Giyuris, and nevertheless, the Pasuk says, Vatishak Orpa Lachamoisa, Orpa kissed her mother-in-law and then left. And actually, today's daf of Sota talked about horrible things that she did after that. Rus Dovka Ba, whereas Rus cleaved to Naomi, and it uses that same Shodesh Dovak, Omar. So he says, Shori Lidabuki Ba, then in that case, it's correct and proper to stick with her, meaning, in other words, don't worry about, the Marsha explains, don't worry about the fact that she's a Mayovis, and on the face of it, she's not allowed to enter into the Kohol, because we know Amoni Vele Amonis, Mayovi Vele Mayovis, she is in fact Mutter Love a Kohol, as in fact Boaz himself ended marrying her, and that's why he uses the word sidbokin to represent that point. She's definitely a worthy addition to the Jewish people. Bechlam, by the way, you have the whole interesting question worth mentioning in this context. There's the whole interesting question of whether Rus was a Gioris back when she was in Moav married to Machlon or not. You have there are different opinions on different sides of it. Was she Misgaya over there in Moav before she married Machlon? Or did she not? Did she marry him as a goita, and then only afterwards was she Nisgaya? And there's problems with each of the explanations. If she was a goita at the time, for example, then what good afterwards is the whole thing where Boaz has to be miyabim her in order to help her husband's neshama? What good is it going to do if he was married to her when she's a goita? On the other hand, if she was Misgaya, then how is Naomi trying to talk her out of, why is Naomi trying to talk her and Orpah out of coming back to Eretz Yisrael and joining the Jewish people? So some years back, I came up with an idea that maybe what it was is essentially that they were Nisgaya as children, where we know the din is a based in Kimimagaya children, but then when they become older, then they have the option to renounce it or continue with it. So therefore, the vote would be that would be the situation over here. So they were considered Jews, but the question is, do they want to stick with it? So Orpah didn't, and Rus did, in a nutshell.
They took them as kids.
That would be the way I wanted to explain it. The truth is actually what you can have an interesting point is you have in halacha there can be a certain rare case where a person is actually considered a child until age 35. Namely, normally, of course, a boy becomes bar mitzvah at age 13 and a girl at 12 is when at that time they develop shtei sairus, they develop pubic hairs and other changes of maturity. On the other hand, you have the Gemara tells us in Yevamos and in some other places, you can have a person who develops physical signs that show that their body is not developing in the normal way. They never develop shtei sairus. In the case of a girl, she never develops a normal feminine shape. In the case of a boy, he still has a high-pitched voice, etc. Various things like that that show that there's some kind of chromosomal or hormonal problem or whatever. And they're called, respectively, for a girl is called an Ilonis, and a boy would be called a Swisschama. And then you have a case where they haven't developed shtei sairus, but they also haven't developed any of those signs that show that they're a Sris or Ilonis respectively, and the halacha is then they're considered a child until age 35. So my proposal in that article was that Rus was in that situation. The Medrash says that actually she had no womb until Hashem created her one Bederach Nes. So therefore, she may have been in her 20s when she married Machlon, but nevertheless, she's still considered a child until age 35, until one way or the other. Either she develops Simone Ilonis or she turns 35 years old. It's an idea of mine. I don't know that, you know, I don't know that any, I don't know that any, you know, I have, you know, there are, I haven't presented it to any great Talmud Chachamim to ask them what they think of it. But anyway, so the Medrash says that at the end of Sefer Rus, it says Vayiten Hashem lo hiroyin, Hashem gave her pregnancy, and the Medrash explains, meaning that she had no womb and Hashem created one for her. So that being the case, we could conceivably understand that she may have been this neither here nor there, not Ilonis and not non-Ilonis kind of, and therefore you. Sorry, it says also didn't. Okay. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara. Well, that's the question. That's the one whether there are different Mephoshim, and there are different Mephoshim who explain that they married them as goitis, and it was a serious aver. He wasn't the Nasi. The Malach wasn't the Nasi. He was just a very rich, well-to-do Yid who left Eretz Yisrael and moved to Moab with his family. No. Okay. Onward. The Gemara continues. The Pasuk says, so she's continuing to gather over there. Then the Pasuk says, Boyaz told her when it came time for lunch, Goishi Haloim, come close over here. Now, why this expression Haloim? If he just means that she should come over, then he doesn't need to use the word Haloim. So Amar Abalaza, Remez Ramazla, means by that he was giving her a hint, Asida Malchus Beis David Lotzis Mimena. The kingdom of David is going to descend from her, because David was her and Boaz's great-grandson. Dichtib Bei Haloim, we're in connection with the kingship of David, it uses the word Haloim. Now, he didn't realize that this is what it is. Rashi says, Ruach HaKodesh Nizraka Bei, there was like he spoke without even realizing the full import of what he's saying, but Hashem caused him to say with Ruach HaKodesh that a hint that she's going to be the ancestress of David. And by David, it says, Haloim, Shenemer, Vayoveh Amelach David, Vayeshev Lifnei Hashem. The Pasuk says, David came and sat before Hashem after Nosson HaNavi had come and told him in Nevuah that he's going to have a dynasty that's going to rule over the Jewish people forever. So he comes and sits before Hashem in the Mishkan, Vayomer, and he says, Mi Anochi Hashem Alekim U'mi Beisi, who am I, Hashem, and who is my household? Ki Havi'esani Ad Haloim, that you brought me all the way to this position. So we see that the word Haloim is used in connection with kingship. So therefore, when he says Haloim, then it has the same implication. Marsha points out there's a deeper connection between the word Haloim and the kingship of Beis David. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Avodah Zarah, well, the Pasuk tells us, first of all, in Sefer Shmuel, that at one point when they fought against Ammon, they captured, as part of the war spoils, they captured a crown that used to be on the head of Getchke there in Ammon, and they made it into David's royal crown. The Gemara explains in Avodah Zarah that there was a Goyish, a friend of David, by the name of Itai Agiti, who was Mevatalit, so now it's allowed to be used. Otherwise, of course, it would have had to be destroyed like any other thing that's used for Avodah Zarah. Anyway, the Gemara mentions there and in a couple of other places that this crown was shaped in such a way that it would only fit a certain kind of head. And in fact, it became a simon. Only the legitimate heir to Malchus Beis David is able to wear that crown. So, for example, it says Adoniyahu at the end of David's life, the beginning of Sefer Melachim, when he tried to seize the kingship for himself, the Gemara says Bikish Lahomu V'lo Helamtei. He tried to get it to fit on his head, and it wouldn't fit. He didn't have the shape of head for it. Whereas David did, and Shlomo did, and afterwards the other legitimate kings from Malchus Beis David did. So the word Helamtei is related to the word Haloim. So therefore, that's why the word Haloim represents the kingship. The pashtus, it was a nest that Hashem made that only the legitimate person would have the right shape of head. Yeah. If the hat fits weird. The Maharal explains basically this and the next couple of drushas where the Gemara is going to say that there's different things in what happened over there during lunch. There's different details over there that hint at the future of Malchus Beis David. So the Maharal explains, because after all, this is Boaz and Ruth have met. And this is, you know, this is a watershed moment in Jewish history. This is, you know, they're going to end up marrying, and from them is going to come Malchus Beis David. Therefore, now this first time that they met is where you have all these hints and allusions in what happened over there to what's going to be with that.
What does it mean, a watershed moment?
A watershed moment means like a very pivotal moment, like everything depends on here from now on. Yeah. Okay. So he continues, he says, V'tavalt piteich b'chomets. He said, dip your bread in vinegar. So Amar Rav Elazar, v'kan shachomets yofel l'sharav. You see from this that vinegar is something good to have when it's hot. Because what time of the year is this taking place? They're harvesting the barley and the wheat. So we're talking about between Pesach and Shavuos, approximately. This is actually one of the reasons, by the way, that's brought in the poskim, why Megillas Rus is associated with Shavuos, because it takes place around Shavuos time. Anyway, so therefore it's the hot season of the year. So therefore vinegar is good to help cool you off. But Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni Omer, Remez Ramazla, again, there was also an allusion in it, a hint in it, which again, Boaz himself didn't realize the full import of it, but it was there. Osid Bein Lotzis Mimech, a descendant is going to come from you, Rus, Shemais of Koshin Kachoimetz, whose deeds are as bitter and harsh as vinegar. Umanu Menashe, namely King Menashe, one of the later kings of Yehuda, who was a terrible Rosha and introduced Avodah Zarah into Eretz Yisrael and killed Yeshaya and did all kinds of other terrible things. He did Shuvah at the end, but still. So Marsha points out, you first of all, he was the worst Rosha of all the kings of Yehuda, and also he ruled the longest. He ruled for 55 years. Therefore, we can draw a comparison with vinegar. What is vinegar? Wine that was left out too long. So the same way, like he was left out too long and became very sharp and very bitter. Next. What?
He didn't start off that way?
The Yavad Gemara in Brachas that implied, that says that even when he was a kid riding on his father Chizkiyahu's shoulders, he was already expressing himself in a way of wickedness. But here Marsha is saying that the more you leave vinegar, the sharper it gets. So therefore, like a Menashe, the more he waned, the worse a Rosha he got. Although, yes, eventually he did do tshuva. Okay. The pasuk continues. Vateshev mitzada kotzrim. Continuing with Rus, she sat next to the harvesters. So what's the point of mentioning that? Rashi explains that now you could have had, for example, that she's sitting next to him, or she could have had that she's sitting between them or something like this. You have all of them are sitting between him and her. Therefore, Amar Rav Elazar mitzada kotzrim v'lo socha kotzrim. She wasn't sitting among the harvesters. Remez Ramazla. Again, this ended up being a hint. Asidu Malchus based David chitischalik, that the kingship based David is going to end up being divided. You have the kingdom of the Aseres Hashvatim versus the kingdom of the two Shvatim. Meaning, in other words, it actually says the point is because you had all of the shepherds, not shepherds, because all of the harvesters rather are interposing between her and Boaz, therefore that symbolizes this idea of division, that there's eventually going to be a division in the kingdom. Marsha says another point also is that the kingdom of Beis David is not going to be within the Jewish people, like the exclusive kingdom. It's only going to be off to the side. There's going to be another kingdom that's going to be ruling over part of the Jewish people, as in fact there was. The Maharal makes the point also, the word kotzrim themselves, the harvesters, literally kotzer, means they cut the grain. So therefore, that also symbolizes there's going to be a cut, there's going to be a split in Malchus Beis David. Then the pasuk continues, Vayitzpot lakoli, Boaz handed her some parched grain, Vatoichal, and she ate the gomer. By the way, the Gemara doesn't mention this, but the Medrash mentions a point that if Boaz had realized that what he's doing over there by this meal is going to be recorded in the psukim, and like this, it's going to say by Yitzbat Lakoli that he handed her a little toasted grain, he would have given her fatted calves. Like, in other words, he didn't realize how important this is, what he's doing, that's being written down for all time in Tanakh. And the Medrash goes on to say, by the same token, anything that a person does now, Tanakh is long since over, but still there's a book in Shemayim where the Yohan Navi is writing and Hashem is signing and whatever. So everything that a person does has tremendous impact, and a person needs to realize that. Anyway, so the pasuk says vatoichal vatisba vatoisar. The pasuk says she ate, she was satisfied, and she left some food over. And then the pasuk goes on to describe after that she took the extra leftover food home to bring to Nami. Anyway, so why the triple expression? Amar Rav Elazar vatoichal bimei David. This that it says that she ate also refers to we're not just talking about again something that happened at that point at that particular lunch while they were in the middle of the harvest, but rather it also represents that later on there was a tremendous there was a tremendous eating, and there were riches in the times of David. Batisba b'mei Shloimeh, and she was satisfied, refers to the time of Shloimeh when there was even greater riches in Eretz Yisrael. And when it says she left over, refers to the time of Chizkiah. So Rashi explains by all those three kings, specifically David, Shlomo, and Chizkiah, it says that Goyish kings were bringing them presents and tributes. So therefore, the Gemara is seeing a remez to the three of them in here in the fact that she ate so plentifully by this meal. Marsha says another meaning of it can also be it refers to Rus herself. The Gemara elsewhere explains that Rus herself lived very long and she was still alive in Shlomo HaMelech's times. So literally, she was able to eat in David's times and she was still able to be satisfied in Shlomo's times. On the other hand, by the time Chizkiyahu came along, which is about 300 years after Shlomo, then she had long since passed away. So then it's only about Toisar, like there's something left over because she didn't actually live that long. What about Naomi? We don't know when she passed away. The Maharal also makes a point, in other words, they had tremendous wealth and everything in David and Shlomo's times. On the other hand, in Chizkiyahu's times, the Aseret HaShevatim had already been taken into Golos, and even the kingdom of Yehuda itself was very badly ravaged and hurt by Sennacherib and his army until they were wiped out by the right outside Yerushalayim, as the Gemara is next going to go on to talk about. So therefore, it's like in his time, there was only about Toisa, there was only like a leftover. What about? We're not talking about. The Ikadamri, right. The Ikadamri, others say, Vatoichal be made David uvi me Shlomo. Others say that the Vatoichal refers to both David and Shlomo's times, because that was one after the other, so it can be considered as one unit. Vatisba be me Chizkiyah. According to that, the Vatisba refers to Chizkiyah's times. Vatoisa be me Rebbe, and the Vatoisa, that there was still something left over, refers to the times of Rebbe 1,000 years after that. As we find in Rebbe's times, there was also tremendous wealth that Rebbe had, and because we learn elsewhere in the Gemara, Ahu Raire de Rebbe, the stable boy of Rebbe, who took care of all of his horses and other livestock, Haba Asur, Mishabur Malka, was even richer than King Shabur, the king of Persia. The point being, one point is because the stable boy had the right to keep all the waste of the animals, and he could sell it as fertilizer, and so he made a lot of money from it. So the point is that even in Rebbe's times, long after David and Shlomo, and long after Chizkiyahu, there was still great riches among the descendants of David, the descendants of Rus, and therefore the Vatoisa refers to that. And the Maharal makes a similar point. In other words, that in Rebbe's times already, the Beis Mikdash had been destroyed, the Jewish people are in Golos. Nevertheless, there was still a Vatoisa, there was still something left over, this riches that we're talking about. And b'masnisetona, and in a Braisa, we learn another possibility. Vatoichal means ba'olam hazeh. It means the goodness and the honor and the riches and everything that Rus and her descendants had in Olam Hazeh. Vatisba Limosa Mashiach, she was satisfied, refers to how it'll be Limosa Mashiach. Vatoisa, and then there's the leftover, will be La'osid Lavoi, the times beyond after Mashiach comes, the time after Tchias Amesim. So here also Marashah says, we can be talking about Rus herself. She herself got to eat and enjoy this world eventually once she married Boaz. Then she also gets a place in a great place in Limosa Mashiach, and a great place, La'asid Lavoi. So all three phrases can actually refer to her own person, to what happens to her personally, not just to her descendants. Okay. Having talked about, so now we digress to talk all about Rus. So now we're getting back to before the Gemara had been talking about the importance of having special clothes for Shabbos. And we said, because since the Pasuk says, the word b'chibadte means that you honor Shabbos by wearing nice clothing. So now the Gemara brings another drosha related to that. In connection with Sennacherib's army. In connection with Sennacherib's army, so the Yeshaya is saying in Nevuah how they're going to be destroyed before they conquer Yerushalayim, and he uses the expression v'sachas kevodoy and tachas his honor. Whereas we're going to talk about in a second, tachas has a couple of meanings in Lashon Kodesh. So tachas his honor, yekad yekoid. There's going to be a burning ki yekoid esh, like the burning of a fire. So what does that mean? What's tachas kvoidoi? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, v'tachas kvoidoi v'loi kvoidoi mamash. It means that underneath his kvoid, but not the kvoid itself. Meaning, in other words, Rashi explains that Rabbi Yochanan is saying the clothes are called their kvoid, because like we said before, clothes give kvoid to a person. When the Pasuk is saying tachas kvoidoi, the word tachas means underneath. What is underneath a person's clothing? Their body. Therefore, the Pasuk is saying that the bodies of Sennacherib's soldiers are going to be burnt, but their clothing will stay intact. One point is, Rashi actually on the Pesukim over there brings from a Medrash that we have by Noach over there, when Chum saw him in his degradation and made fun of him and did even worse and whatever, and then Shem and Yefes took a garment and covered him. The kingdom of Ashur, and later on in Parshas Noach, when it lists the 70 nations, it mentions over there, Ashur is one of the descendants of Shem. Therefore, in the schuster back, because they covered Noach with a cloth, therefore they have the schus that later on their descendants, 2,000 years later, their clothing remained intact even when their bodies were burnt.
Also mean that their
panerias
did not match their
Hatzarias? Well, yeah, I mean, but they're Goyish soldiers. There's really no chiddush in that, but yeah. Anyway, so Rabbi Yochanan understands, again, Rashi says that kvodoy means the clothing, and tachas kvodoy means what's underneath the clothing, meaning their bodies. So Rabbi Yochanan, therefore Rabbi Yochanan is going according to his own svara, decoding the money mechabdose, where, as we said before, Rabbi Yochanan called his clothes my honorers, so therefore he understands kvodoy in the pasuk over here in the same sense. On the other hand, Rabbi Lozer Omer, Vesachas Kvodei means Tachas Kvodei Mamish. Rabbi Lozer holds that no, Tachas Kvodei, he says Kvodei does not mean the clothes. Rashi explains he doesn't hold that Kvodei means clothes, but instead he explains that Tachas means instead of, like you have Shur Tachas Asher or Ayin Tachas Ayin or other such expressions. So therefore, so he says, the actual kvodoy, which he understands kvodoy to be the body, rather than like Rabbi Yochanan does the clothing, instead of the body, instead of kvodoy, there will be ashes. So again, he agrees with Rabbi Yochanan that the clothes were left intact. And one point, besides the dignity of Bnei Shem, there's also the point, this way the Jewish people could take those clothes as spoils of war. But the idea is, he's saying that tachas kvodoy means not like Rabbi Yochanan says underneath, but rather instead of. Instead of kvoida, instead of their bodies, all that's left is ashes. And then Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Omer tachas kvoida means kisreifas b'nei Aaron. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni has a third possibility of how to douch in the psukim. He agrees with Rabbi Yochanan that tachas means underneath, but he agrees with Rabbi Lozer that kvoida means the body. Therefore, he has to understand that it means what's underneath the body, what's underneath, what's the level within the body, the neshama. Therefore, he says, "Tachas kvodei means kisreifas bnei Aaron," means that these soldiers of Sancheiribs were destroyed in the same way, lahavdil, as Aaron's sons were killed. Not even Abihu. Ma lahalan sreifas neshama v'guf kayim. Just like over there, their neshamas were burnt. Fire entered into their nostrils and burnt their insides, but their bodies remained intact. And in fact, the Gemara learns from that in Sanhedrin that is Srefa, the Missus Basin of Srefa, is accomplished in a similar way by burning out the person's inside, but leaving the body intact. Afkan, Srefa's Neshama, but Guf Kayim, the same way over here, their Neshamas were burnt, but their bodies remained intact. So in other words, it comes out according to Rashi, of the three opinions over here, you really only have two opinions what actually happened. Both Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Lazar agree that only that the bodies were burnt and the clothes remained intact, and they're just arguing how to derive that from the pasuk. And Rabbi Shmuel Nachmani is saying the bodies also remained intact. That's according to Rashi. Marsha disagrees. He says that Rabbi Lazar may agree that clothes are called mechabduse, that they're called kvodoy. So therefore, all he's arguing is that he holds that tachas means instead of rather than underneath. So therefore, in other words, he would hold that the actual clothing was burnt as well, which means, according to Marsha, you have three different opinions of what happened. Rabbi Yochanan says their bodies were burnt, but their clothes remained intact. Rabbi Lazar says also their clothes were burnt. And Rabbi Shmuel Nachmani says not only their clothes were not burnt, but not their bodies either. Okay. The Gemara continues. Amr of Acha bar Ada, or Abba, Amr of Yechanan, Minayim l'shinui b'godim min ha-Torah. Where do we see in the Torah the concept that you have to change your clothes when you're doing something, when you're doing a more important job? That's considered a covered for Hashem to change your clothes. It includes, for example, changing into Shabbos clothes. It includes, as the Gemara is going to say, for example, the Koyanim changing into less expensive clothes when they're doing Trumas Hadeshen. So Shenema, Ufashetas God of Alabash, God of Acherim. The Pasuk says about the Koyan when he's going to clear the ashes off the Mizbeach. He should take off his regular big dekohana and wear other clothes. And what is other clothes? V'tana dreda b'shmo, lim the Torah derecheretz. The Torah is teaching you the proper way to act, that he should wear cheaper big dekohana for that. It can be ones that are a little bit worn out. It can mean ones that were made of cheaper material to begin with, because the godim shebishabah and kedera l'rabbi, it's only right that the clothing in which a servant cooked food for his master, which is similar to Hitzah Sadeshin, and the fact that when you're cooking food, you're liable to get dirty, al yimzik behen kos l'rabbi, don't wear the same clothing when you're pouring a cup of wine for your master. There you should be wearing nicer and more honorable clothing. So by the same token, the Kohen would wear cheaper big tikkunah. They have to wear big tikkunah. It's still an avoda, but they wear cheaper clothing for cheaper big tikkunah for Itzar Sedeshen, and then for the other avodas in the Mishnah Mikdash, they wear more expensive. Now, Shah points out, you know, you actually have this metaphor over here, Bishul Ben Kedera and Yimzeg Kosler Avoy, directly relates to Shabbos. You're cooking on Erev Shabbos, and then you're making Kiddush Friday night. So the point is, don't be wearing the same clothes Friday night when you come to make Kiddush, to pour a cup before Hashem that you did the Shabbos set that you did Friday afternoon when you're cooking. Okay. More on this topic about the proper clothing that a person has to wear. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Chiya Ba'aba, it's a shameful thing for a Talmid Chacham to go out into the street with patched shoes. So the Gemara asks, "Varam Acha b'Chanina Nafik?" Don't we see that Rab Acha b'Chanina did that? And in fact, the Gemara in Brachas, which is where it also has this, has in fact over there the expression is that Rab Chiya Ba'aba did it. So the same Rab Chiya Ba'aba is saying that you shouldn't do it. He himself did it. So the answer is Amar Rav Acha b'Reb Rav Nachman b'tlai aga b'tlai. It's only a problem when there's patches on top of the patches. So in other words, the shoes wore a hole through them. So he patched it. Then the patch itself developed a hole in it. So he patched on top of that. That's a gnai for a Talmid Chacham. But only one patch is not a problem. One layer of patch is not a problem. And that's how Rav Acha b'Chanin or Rav Chiya Ba'aba went. The Gemara in Brachos over there actually mentions more details as well over there, which the Gemara is not mentioning over here. The Gemara makes the distinction between whether the holes and the patches are on the top of the shoe, on the upper of the shoe, which everybody can see, versus on the sole of the shoe, where people can't see it anyhow. And also there's a difference between summer and winter, because during the winter time, everybody's shoes are dirty with mud anyway, so you're not really going to notice all the patches. But here the Gemara is not getting into that level of detail. Well, yeah, but you could also have the holes could be on the uppers. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, continues the Gemara. The Amr of Chiba Abba Amr of Yechon, Kol Tamid Chacham Shinimse Revav Abba Godav, any Tamid Chacham where Revav, which means Rashi says like fat or grease or whatever, where there's a stain of that on his clothing, Chayav Misa. He's Chayav Misa because Rashi says he has to dress in an honorable, proper way because of the covet of his Torah. People are going to look down on him if they see that there were grease stains on his clothing. The Rabbi Hananel on the Gemara makes a related point also. People aren't going to want to touch him. People are going to want to physically stay away from him because they don't want to get grease on their clothing either. And that's not right. Shenema, as you have the pasuk says, Kol Misanai Eh Ohavu Moves, all those who hate me love death. Now the word Misanai is a little bit unusual. If it just meant hate, then it would be Sonai. So I'll take Misanai Ela Masniai. So don't read Misanai, those who hate me. And this is in that pedicle over there, the Torah personified is talking about herself. So not Misanai, those who hate me, but Masniai, those who cause me to be hated. Meaning, in other words, people who cause the honor of the Torah to be degraded by, for example, wearing stained clothing, and therefore people look down at them and they think, this is actually tomorrow's Perek Echad of Rambam mentions this point. In fact, Marsha says, you have that afterwards, the Pasuk says, Ki motzi motzo chayim, those who find me, the Torah, have found life. So now the Pasuk is saying, nevertheless, that's true. You find Torah, you find life, but not if, on the other hand, if the same person is masniyai, then not, or habu mavas, then he's going to have the opposite. Ravina Omar, Ravina says, it's not revav that's the problem, but rather revad itmar. Rather, the problem is if the Talmid Chacham has revad on his clothing. Rashi explains that revav means revad means shichvas zer. So therefore, that's a much more degrading thing than stama grease stain. Shenema mavadti mervadti arsi, as we see a pasuk also in Mishlei that describes an isha zoyna over there, and she says, "I've spread my bed with fancy spreads." So we see that revad then would be something that you would have that would tend to get on a person's clothes in bed, namely shichvas zer, and especially over there in the pasukim that's talking about an isha zoyna. A couple of other Rishonim, the Rif and Rabbeinu Hananel, have a different understanding. They say that Revad means blood, and the Rif explains. He explains the vote is when if you find blood on the Talmid Chacham's clothing, people are likely to think that it's blood from a nida that he had relations with his wife when she's a nida, and therefore that's going to be much more. So a grease stain, Ravina is saying, is not so bad, but something like that is really bad. However, the Gemara says, actually, Rav Chiya Ba'aba's version that says revav, which is grease, and Ravina's version, which says Ravad, which is Shechvas Zara, or blood, they're not really arguing Habi Glima Habi Levusha. There's a difference between the glima, which is the outer garment, there, even Ravad, even grease is a problem. On the other hand, the Levusha, on the lower garment, we don't mean the underwear, we mean like a shirt or something, which is under his kapata, then it's only a problem if there's Ravad, but not so much Ravav is not such a problem over there. And Rabbeinu Hananel makes a point in that connection. Part of it is, first of all, because it's covered over by his other clothing, but also because people will realize, you know, it might just be, first of all, it's not even blood from a nida. It may just as well be blood from a bug or something that he killed. Or it may just be that he doesn't have clean clothes to change into right now, so it's not going to be so degrading. People aren't going to jump to conclusions and think that it was blood of a nida, as opposed to if it's on his outer clothing, then yeah. In this connection, further talking about the type of clothing a Talmud Chacham has to wear, Amar Rav Chiya ba'Aba Amar Rav Yechanan, my dichtiv, what does it mean, a pasuk in Yeshaya? So the pasuk says over there that at one point Hashem told Yeshaya to go Oroim v'yochef for 3 years. Literally, Oroim v'yochef means naked and shoeless. And then he goes on then, and then the pasuk goes on to say that Hashem says, just as Kasher Holach Abdi Yishayahu Orim V'yochev, just as my servant Yishayahu went Orim V'yochev, the pasuk goes on to describe, so also the Golos of Mitzrayim and of Cush, where he's describing over that the king of Ashur is going to conquer Mitzrayim and Cush and take them into Golos, and they're going to be Orim V'yochev, they're going to be naked and shoeless. So therefore, what Yishayah has done for these 3 years is a simon that's going to happen to them. So what does it mean, Orim V'yochev? It doesn't literally mean that he went naked and shoeless, because how is he going to go like that for 3 years? What happens to learning Torah? What happens b'chlal to decent behavior? It means Orim B'godim B'luim. It means naked in the sense that he was wearing worn-out clothing. V'yochev means B'min Olim HaMetuloyim, that he was wearing patched shoes. So even though we just said before that a Talmud Chacham has to be careful about his deportment and about how he dresses, and he's not supposed to be wearing patched shoes or whatever, but here Hashem specifically told Yeshaya to do otherwise for 3 years so that it would be a simon, so everybody would see that this is what's going to happen to them, to the mighty empire of Mitzrayim and Cush, that they're all going to be taken into Golos. This also, by the way, ties in with the thing we were just saying before about shame and Yefes and Chom with Noach, because Rashi mentions over there in the story in Parshas Noach, because Chom degraded his father and then left him uncovered and so forth, therefore Mitzrayim and Cush, they being descendants of Chom, are going to end up suffering the same kind of treatment when they're taken into Golos. So by then, the Pashtus means Orim V'yochef, literally naked and bare. But we're saying by Yeshaya, it didn't literally mean that. It just meant that he's wearing worn-out clothing and patched shoes. The Rif makes a point, actually, that the vote would be, the Gemara mentioned two things just now. It said it's a gnai, it's a shameful thing for a Talmud Chacham to go with patched shoes, and then it said it's chayav misa if he goes out with grease or shechvas zera or whatever it is on his clothing. So because the second one being chayav misa, because it makes a chilul Hashem, therefore Hashem wasn't going to tell Yeshaya to do that. But the first one, which is only that he should wear patched shoes, that's only a gnai for a Talmud Chacham. So fine, Hashem can tell Yeshaya for the next 3 years, override that normal thing, that it would be a gnai, and go ahead and do it anyway as a simon of what's going to happen. Continues the Gemara on this topic. Amar Rav Yechanan, Talmid Chachamim. So the Gemara, here Ein Yaakov is skipping a little bit of the following discussion. And the Gemara gets into a discussion about grease stains on clothing based on a Mishnah from Seder Taurus about when it's considered a chatzitza and when not. So in that connection, the Mishnah mentions that on clothing of banoyim, which literally means builders, then a stain on one side is considered a chatzitza. So Amar Rav Yechanan, Talmid Chachamim, Dekoren banoyim. So the builders over here doesn't mean builders as in architects. It means Talmid Chachamim, Shmipnei she'oiskim b'binyanei she'olam kol yameihem, because they spend their whole lives building up the world. Like we say, Al tikri banoyich ela banoyich. So therefore, that's what the Mishnah means over there, that the Gemara had quoted, that says that a stain on one side is considered a chatzitza, because we just established that Talmud Chacham is not allowed to go out with clothing that has stains on it. So therefore, even a stain on one side, even if it doesn't penetrate all the way through the fabric, for him it would be considered a chatzitza. Whereas the Mishnah says over there, for a bur, for an amoretz, then only if the stain penetrates through from one side to the other. And the Amar Rav Yechanan, what is the definition of a Talmud Chacham that we return him a lost object, even if he can't give a simon, but just says that he recognizes it on sight? So that would be that would be somebody who's careful about his undershirt to turn it the right side out. Meaning, so Rashi explains, if he put it on inside out, and then it doesn't look nice because people see the seams, then he'll be careful to turn it the right way out. So then that marks him as a Talmud Chacham. So Maharsha points out, first of all, that we don't mean over here. I mean, there's many different definitions of the time of a Talmud Chacham. We'll continue in the next pieces of the Gemara. We'll continue on Sunday, Be'ez Hashem. The Gemara is going to give different other definitions of a Talmud Chacham. But for certain purposes, we say that a person has a Talmud Chacham if he has this quality. And then in this particular case, this is enough for him to be. So the point is, because, and he explains, what's the point of him turning it the right side out? Means we just said that a stain on his clothing, even on one side, for him is a chatzitza, and he's not supposed to wear it. So therefore, what will happen is, if he finds a stain on one side of his clothing, he will turn it the right side. If he doesn't find a stain, he'll turn it the right way out to check whether there's a stain on the other side as well. And if not, then he won't wear that clothing. So therefore, it fits with the previous piece of Gemara. By the way, in Shulchan Aruch, it brings this this definition, but you also have a definition that it brings in Bav Metzia, where a Talmud Chacham who never lies about anything with the exception of three things. If they ask him whether he slept on a certain bed, or when he learned a certain Masechta, and whether he stayed by a certain person's house. So how that fits with our Gemara over here, there's different Mephoshim that talk about, does that Gemara contradict this one, and it's therefore only the definition there and not the definition here? Or does it mean that it has to be both? That it has to be that he's not Meshane B'dibur, and that he's also careful with his deportment to dress in a way that will bring honor to the Torah. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGola. Chav Ches here. Chav Zayin here, rather. We were talking the last couple of days about aspects of the Suda that Tzaddikim and Ba'al Sid Lavoi. So the Rebbe goes on to say that based on what he talked about, we can understand that nowadays all we have to do is open our eyes and see the actual Metzius, that we're already sitting together with Hashem, Yisrael B'Kutsh B'Chol Kol Achad, by the table that's already set for the wedding feast, where there's going to be the Suda of the Levyasin and the Shor Abar and the wine preserved from Maaseh Bereishis. And you have at the end of it, as the Gemara describes in Pesachim, that Hashem will tell David Malka Mashiach to take the cup and lead benching. And he says, Ani Avorech, I will lead the benching. V'li Nor Levorech, and it's appropriate for me too. Shenema Kosi Shor Sesa V'Shem Hashem Ekra. So all of that is ready now, and we just have to open our eyes and then realize that reality. Halacha. If a person sees certain kinds of people who look unusual, so he sees a black person and it's like the first time in his life he ever saw him, or a person who is very red, much redder than normal, or an albino who's very white, or a person who's very tall and skinny, or a midget, or hidrakono, which the definition is somebody whose skin is covered with warts, or psui harosh, somebody who all his hairs are stuck and matted together. Or if he sees an elephant or a monkey, which looks somewhat similar to a person, but also look like a deformed person. So all of those, you say the bracha, Mashana Abrius, but you only say it the first time you ever see it in your life, because then it's like a very big noticeable difference. So we see them already from when we're little kids. So therefore, in practice, we don't end up saying these brachas.